Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today. Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose.
You know it's Taz and Moose. Hey. That's right. On a Friday morning, coming to you live, Rocky Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocky Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. You've got Mike and Pete across the way, Bogus Double Duty, sitting in with me for 3 hours up until 9 a.m. Eastern time. 2 hours now, and also doing updates. Taz is out sick, dealing with a sinus infection on antibiotics, was sick all week. Decided not to battle through one last day and decided to stay home, which is
un-Taz-like.
Well, yeah, because all he talks about is how he likes to grind every
right.
single day. I'm never sick. I'm impenetrable. Well, not to a sinus infection. No, we hopefully he feels better and he should be A-okay and ready to go. Come your way Monday morning, but we're all fired up. Pete brought it up before the start of the show. He's happy that Taz came in here with a sinus infection. He was all excited, right, Pete?
I've always wanted one before Easter.
Well, first of all, I would tell you then to not sit on Taz's lap every morning and ask for wrestling tales.
But it's not just that. It's as we all know, Taz is basically every single show like hacking up a lung as people are speaking. So it's not exactly like he keeps those germs to himself.
Are they contagious though? Sinus infections?
I think they are. Yes.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I think if you have a sinus infection, you should. If you bring your child to school with a sinus infection, I think your child would be sent home immediately. No?
I don't know. I see kids walking out at pickup time that like are halfway on their deathbed.
Which is a problem.
Yes.
Which I do have a massive issue with, because we had, we got sent about 6 weeks ago. We got sent a note home with our son Jackson from school, and he's in kindergarten. He's our oldest, right? We've got three boys, Jackson, Paul, Gregory, 6, 4, and 2, right, through their birthdays. So, and we got sent a note that that strep throat and flu were going through the kindergarten.
Okay.
Right? Like a hot knife through butter. And I was like, well, who exactly, when their child is sick with the flu or strep throat, someone obviously sent their kid to school.
Yeah.
Like, and what are you doing? Like, if our son is sick, he's staying home.
Right.
Pink eye, he's staying home. Sore throat, he's staying home. If body aches and temperature, flu-like conditions, he's staying home. We're not sending our kid to school with 101-degree fever. But parents do, and it's troubling. Because then you get every other kid sick because, first off, they're not scrubbing their hands like you and I do, right? They're not walking around with the antiseptic and the hand spray and everything like that to make sure you're not spreading germs. I mean, they're basically like a walking germ. So who the hell is sending their kids to school?
And I know that some people like need school because they've got jobs and whatever.
I get that.
But when your kid's sick, you got to keep him home. It happened just on Monday. I'm standing outside the door waiting for my son to come out of his pre-K class. And one of the mothers who we know very well is telling me how she's sick and then her son has a horrible ear infection. And she goes, we were at the clinic yesterday. So like I take a small step back from her because she says she has strep and I don't want to get that.
Oh, my God.
And then she goes, and I sent him today, and he made it just fine. I'm like, you were in the doctor yesterday, getting medicine for his horrible ear infection, and you sent him to school today?
Yeah, you should.
Not even 24 hours of medicine?
That's brutal.
Brutal.
That's brutal. That's like 2 weeks ago, right? 2 weeks ago, we had a little get together at our house, right? We had just immediate family, right? And Donna's sister Laura, right? She's got two girls. Sammy and Charlotte, right? And Charlotte and my older son Jackson are close, right? They're close cousins, right? They love hanging out with each other and whatever. So Charlotte, they came over and they had a good time and whatever. They got ordered pizza. Some of Donna's family was in town from Toronto and stuff like that. Next day, we come to find out that she was at the doctor's office and she had strep throat, and she had a sore throat when she came to our house the day before. I said, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, she's like, well, Charlotte really wanted to come. I go, what? That's great. I go, but we have three boys.
Right.
They're running around the house. It's like basically There are germs all over the place. Your daughter is sick, and I love Charlotte. She's great. It has nothing to do with her. It has to do with the fact that she's got strep throat. Like, what are you doing? And then they're laughing about it. Well, wait a second. If we have to and thank God none of the kids got sick, but if we have to deal with the after effects then of them, of our three boys get sick, or Donna gets sick, or I get sick, then I got a problem.
And there are kids that come out of my daughter's class that wear shorts. Yeah. And their winter jacket.
That's terrible.
And it's like, well, he likes to wear pants. You know, he doesn't want to wear pants. Like, he thinks the shorts are cool. I'm like, he's eight. He doesn't win these conversations.
Right. Put
like,
the pants
you're
on.
You're wearing pants to school. It's wintertime. It doesn't. I don't care how hot it is in school. The heat might be on. I remember being in, you know, the classroom radiator is firing away. But you're wearing pants because you're going to be outside walking to the bus or walking to the car. You're not wearing shorts when it's 35. I don't care what you say. You're seven.
Yeah,
but somehow these kids always win these battles.
It's absolutely crazy. Anyway, no doubt about it. Right. At some point in time, right, the parent does have to win the battle. Not many, but over that, they should be able to win that battle. Anyway, out to Arizona we go, and as we are less than a week away from the NFL draft, which will take place first round next Thursday night, the Arizona Cardinals have been on the clock for a long, long time with that number one overall pick, and they've gone through this draft process, and a lot of people have looked at their GM and specifically their head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, and brought up his love affair for, you know, Kyler Murray coming out of Oklahoma, that maybe he will be the number one overall pick, to the point where right now, Kyler Murray, if you go out to Las Vegas, I think he's minus 2,000, might even be a little bit more, that he is going to be the number one overall pick. Well, how about Josh Rosen? We haven't heard much from him, aside from him, you know, at one point in time, scruffing out anything connection to the Arizona Cardinals when Kingsbury took over as head coach. Then he said he was hacked and everything and the like. The Cardinals have done their due diligence on Kyler Murray here through this draft process. Here is Josh Rosen, courtesy of SI.com, talking about his situation in Arizona.
I think the season probably went as poorly as it could possibly go. But within that, had an unbelievable time. I think when people talk about, like, you can't listen to criticism or don't ever read articles, like, you have to be aware of what's going on to a certain extent. So, like, I definitely understand the situation. I mean, it's annoying, but, like, it is what it is. Football is a business, and I definitely respect the higher-ups and their decisions. Like, we won three games, and each one of those wins, to me, it felt like we won the Super Bowl. And, like, that feeling is so intoxicating, and that's why I just want nothing more than to be a part of a team next year and have the same opportunities to go out and compete. I think, like, the best advice I've ever gotten in life from so many different people is control what you can control. And
I mean, that when he stepped in, now he wasn't well coached. They fired the OC Mike McCoy. They name Byron Leftwich, the quarterback coach, as their offensive coordinator. They get rid of their head coach after the season. They bring in
After one season.
They bring in an entire new staff.
And by the way, the guys who hired the coach who couldn't survive one season because he was an utter disaster, hired the new coach.
Correct. And so, I mean, you look at this scenario for Rosen as you are 6 days away from that first round of the NFL draft. And we'll know here. I mean, I would imagine. You'd have to imagine. I would think that they'd get rid of Rosen before they draft Murray. Would you think?
I guess they can, since they control number one. You know, they don't have to wait. They know they can take Murray. No one can pass him. No one can jump him. He's not going to all of a sudden become a terrible player. But yeah, I mean, or I don't, because I've never done it, I don't know if the leverage is bigger before, or if you wait and see that maybe somebody who wants a quarterback doesn't get one, and then they want Josh Rosen because they couldn't draft somebody, then maybe there's a different, you know, bidding war that starts there. I don't know what's the better situation. My guess is he is on their team after they take Murray at number one.
All right, so then, but then you have absolutely diminished his value. I mean, then you're if you think he's got value at 30 or 40 cents on the dollar now, then doesn't he then at that time have value of 10 cents on the dollar?
But if I'm Steve Keim and I call you today and I go, hey, what would you give me for Josh?
Well, that's fair too.
You know what I'm doing.
Right,
so you're
fair.
Like, oh, Steve, I'll give you a nickel.
Yeah, you know what? That's fair. That's
so
fair.
Maybe you need to hold on to him. So in case, you know, Dave Gettleman yesterday with the Giants saying, I'm taking the best player available at 6 and 17. I'm not reaching. Well, if he stays true to that and at 6 and 17, he takes a defensive end and a cornerback and then he needs a QB, and he doesn't. There's no one left in this to start the second round with. Maybe then he makes a call that he wasn't going to make and goes, "Hey, I'll give you number 30, whatever that is, for Josh Rosen."
Well, and listen, Rosen also talked about the uncertainty in Arizona, and there is great uncertainty. But if you're the Arizona Cardinals and you put together, as they did, a promotional video for the Arizona Cardinals, and your initial cut did not include Josh Rosen, and then you included Josh Rosen after it was pointed out that Rosen was not in that promotional video, doesn't that say a lot about the standing of Josh Rosen in the franchise?
I mean, it's hard to make a video that doesn't involve your quarterback.
Right.
It's really hard. I mean,
for a team that was the worst team in the NFL.
Right. You could miss your star middle linebacker or maybe your big nose tackle. You know, you leave out a tackle for loss or you don't have Patrick Peterson making a pick. It's hard to put an offensive highlight out there that doesn't involve your quarterback.
Well, and you ask, I mean, imagine the Jets right now, right? And they walk around with sandwich boards of pictures of Sam Darnold. Right. I mean, that's what they do. Every morning they drop to their knees and thank the good Lord for Sam Darnold. The Buffalo Bills will promote Josh Allen from now to kingdom come. How about the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield? They think like they hit a home run. They probably did with their star quarterback. So if you're the Cardinals, for a team that was the worst team in the league, where Rosen, when he played, statistically speaking, was the worst quarterback of the NFL last year, I think his QBR rating was 38.7, I mean, which is brutal, and made so many mistakes. And then you get the concern about whether he connects with guys, work ethic, all the concerns you had at UCLA, the concerns are still there right now, bogus for Josh Rosen, and you cut a video that tells you everything where the vibe is. I'd be absolutely stunned. Next Thursday night, if Murray is not the number one overall pick, I'd be absolutely stunned. The only way he's not is if Arizona gets cute, where they feel like reading the draft board, they can move back if some team wants to move up for a defensive player. But then you're playing with fire because ultimately you want to make sure you get the number one player, the player you so crave, and you're sitting there with the number one overall pick. I think it's going to be Murray. Do you?
I do, even though I still think that there's more value in Rosen and Bosa or Quinnen Williams than just Kyler Murray. Because I still have some doubts about Kyler Murray being I think he can play in the NFL. The question is he a dynamic, decade-long starter that we just don't know? So I still think that it's not in a blowout, but I do think there's more value in keeping Rosen and using the first pick on a defender than using the first pick on Murray and making a trade of Rosen. But the least likely scenario is the one that I can't see them moving out of number one and running that risk. If you're taking Murray, you're taking him at number one, and that's it.
Agreed.
And you stay there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then as we know about the uncertainty in Arizona with Josh Rosen, one thing we do know, everybody should be as loved as the Giants love Eli Manning. Here is their general manager, Dave Gettleman, talking about Eli, his play last year, Eli moving forward.
We went into last season believing that Eli still had plenty left, and he proved he did.
Oh, my God. I mean, if you are a true blue Giant fan, and I get what Eli provided for that organization, but there does come a point in time where you got to say, all right, like what juice are they sipping at the practice facility over in Jersey run that Giants organization? If you're Dave Gettleman and you look at the way that Eli played last year and say, I'm not telling you that Eli was the problem. I'm not telling you that Eli can't play anymore. I think the Giants have failed Manning in terms of building a team around him, the offensive line. There's a lot of reasons why the Giants have been a pathetic football team and an embarrassment here for a little bit of time. Now, you can't tell me that Eli all of a sudden showed you last year that we thought he had a ton left, and he proved it. Not coming off last year. I don't think you can look at his game film last year and say that Eli's got a lot of game left. Do you?
No, I mean, obviously it's a tough scenario, right? I mean, you can't stand there and pick him apart and say, well, he's done and
no,
we need
you
to
can't.
Find. So, but you don't need to insult everyone's intelligence by telling us that somehow he was better than we all saw. And obviously there are things that we don't know that in between, in the huddle, in practice, in meetings, that are positives for Eli Manning. And the things that, as you laid out, the offensive line additions didn't work. There are things that kept him from being maybe peak Eli Manning. But peak Eli Manning right now on the doorstep of 40 unathletic,
yep,
not tremendously accurate anymore. I mean, that peak is not impressive. So, I just don't know why David Gettleman insists on overselling him so much. He's your quarterback. I'll disagree, but like, just basically say he's our guy. Don't tell me, though, that he's that good and that we all missed something last year. He stunk and they all stunk, and they better find somebody that can play behind him, whether it's sometime this year or next year, because whatever they think they saw isn't lasting much longer.
Well, and Andrew, I get there's different ways of analyzing players and different analytics, and they can look and analyzing game film. But you almost, in a market in which I think New York fans show themselves for the most, I mean, they're a very, very smart fan base. You're insulting everyone's intelligence. I mean, that's it. From watching that game film, because I'd like to sit down, when I hear Gettleman say that, I'd like to sit down and watch a game film with him. And exactly what we're seeing here from Eli Manning, where you come out of a game where Eli throws the ball poorly and say, no, Eli played well today. Because it's in today's day and age, seeing is believing. And what we have watched and what you've watched here with Eli Manning, especially last year, well, not a particularly good quarterback. Now, there's reasons for that failure. He no longer wants to take a hit. He shies away from contact. The offensive line is not great. But you can't come off that year. Plus, let's not forget, he had a running back that stepped in that was unbelievable in Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, and they had flashes, because all teams have flashes where they look the part. But from start to finish, top to bottom, he didn't have a good season. And he's not young. I mean, there's not going to be a career renaissance here. No matter what you think he played or how well he played last year, it's 2019. He's almost 40. There needs to be a plan for the future. It doesn't need to be a plan for the present. There needs to be a plan for the future behind him, and they still don't have that.
There's a new Netflix docuseries out called Loser. Michael Bent, part of that docuseries, former boxer, actor. It's a very, very intense. His part of that series, very, very intense. We'll get into his life, talk a little bit about his involvement in the docuseries. He'll join Bogus and myself in studio. That comes your way next. It's Taz Moves, Bogus sitting in, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
We're going to be joined here momentarily, Michael Bent in studio, former boxer, actor. He's got a Netflix docuseries at Loser, which is very intense. We'll chat a little bit about his life. The series, certainly where the sport of boxing is right now. Bogus just got a quick update for us. What's going on, Andrew?
And it's all brought to us by Wrangler Outdoor. Pants and shirts made with durable fabrics, moisture management, and UPF 30 protection. Wrangler Outdoor, clothing with outdoor credibility and everyday versatility. Try them on today. The Warriors, the Spurs, and the Sixers all took 2-1 leads in the NBA postseason last night. Golden State, a 132-105 win over the Clippers in L.A., 38 points for Kevin Durant. The Spurs beat the Nuggets, 118-108 down in San Antonio, a career-high 36 in that one for Derek White. And Ben Simmons scored 31 as the Sixers rested Joel Embiid in that bad left knee. They won in Brooklyn, 131-115. Playoff hockey, the Blues rallying for a 3-2 win in OT in Winnipeg. They lead that series 3-2. The Sharks forcing a game 6 with a 5-2 win over the Golden Knights. And Carolina beat Washington 2-1. That series is 2-2. And a quick baseball score, the Mariners win a back-and-forth affair, 11-10 over the Angels. That snaps their 6-game skid. Moose?
All right, Andrew. And we're now joined here by Michael Bent. Michael, good morning. How you doing? Everything good?
I am doing wonderful. Thanks for having me on, guys.
How was the red-eye flight from L.A., all right?
You know how it was, man.
That was a long flight. Were you able to get a little bit of rest or no?
No. Well, first of all, there was like a bunch of kids in the back row and, you know, screaming and carrying on. And there was a very attractive woman from Israel.
Okay.
Who I had my eyes on, see. Okay. I mean, no, not really. Well, yeah. We were kind of eyeing each other.
Nice.
You know, but, hey, listen.
There you go.
I'll explore that at some point.
Well, there you go. Very nice. Well, at least there's that opportunity here moving forward. How you doing, Michael? You good?
I'm doing fantastic, man.
Good. Well, thanks for coming in studio this morning. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, you know, it's a docuseries. You're part of it. Tell us a little bit about the venture and the series Loser and your involvement in it.
I was approached by a dear friend of mine named Bryn Butler, who's a writer from Toronto, and I was introduced to Bryn by Thomas Hauser.
Okay.
The prolific boxing writer.
Yep.
And so he connected us maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. And Brent said, Mike, like last year, Brent said, Mike, I got this thing I'm working on with guys from Netflix. They want to meet you. And they made that happen. And so we shot 3 days in L.A. and 2 days in Queens, New York, where I was like, you know, raised. Cambria Heights and yep. Flesh and Metal Park, where I started boxing. And and Mickey Doozy, man, he's the truth. Yeah, he nails it. And the crew, of course, like, you know, the other crew members.
When they first approached you in terms of your involvement, what they wanted, where they wanted to talk about your life and everything right. like that, was that something that you were open to doing?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, because, you know, I'm an actor. You know, so, like, you know, everyone wants to, like, you know, whether you're an actor or not, everyone wants a platform. Everyone wants to tell their story. And that was a chance to, like, you know, tell my story. You know, and an interesting thing was that we were in Queens shooting, and Mickey hadn't told me the title yet of the show. And he said, Mike, you know, I got something to talk to you about. I'm like, what? He said, well, you know what? The name of the show is going to be Losers. I'm like, my man, no, that's perfect. Because you don't get to be a winner unless you experience loss.
Right.
That's how I, like, you know, process okay. it. Yeah.
And for those who haven't seen your episode yet, I mean, you were the heavyweight champion of the world, and you kind of hated boxing always. I mean, I'm watching it last night. I'm trying to think, did you ever actually enjoy being in the ring?
Hell no, man.
No?
I mean, like, you know, who likes getting hit? Like, you know, I mean, I liked winning.
Okay.
And you know what was really special about my amateur career? You know, I was a pro and I was semi-successful, but, like, you know, the amateur career was really sweet to me because I would meet these great guys from across the country. We would travel, like, you know, across the world and, like, bond and fight the Russians or the Swedes or the, you know, the Koreans, and we would bond. And that was special to me. Like, you know, I'm a high school dropout. So traveling and, like, you know, experiencing different cultures, that's my, you know, education. And that grew me up. So I appreciated, like, you know, the amateur experience. But that, you know, I wasn't particularly that fond of being a pro. But the reason why I turned pro, well, the reason why, like, you know, I think I was so successful, quote unquote, was because I had something to prove. I got knocked out my first pro fight.
Right.
You know, and I was under the instruction of one of the best trainers in the history of the sport, Emmanuel Stewart. I got dumped. You know, so you have to, like, you know, make up for that. I did, I thought.
You said you didn't love it. I mean, you loved it as an amateur, not mm-hmm. when you turned pro. I mean, I've heard, you know, speaking to a lot of former boxers over the years, they talked about, you know, the camaraderie, the work, you know, and everything like that to get yourself prepared to go into a ring, whether it be mentally and obviously the physical road work, the physical work, whether it be on the road, in the ring, and everything like that, going to camp. Did you enjoy that? I mean, that aspect of it, the training aspect of it?
As a professional?
Yeah, as a professional.
Emphatically, no.
No, really?
No.
Because we've had you know, we've had a couple boxers in here. They used to talk about the fact of they didn't miss the fight so much, but they missed
the camaraderie.
The camaraderie. Getting in the ring, but also the work to get themselves prepared to get into the ring.
You know what? When I was maybe like 18, 19 years old, I was sponsored by Shelly Finkel.
Okay.
Right? Sweet guy. I love Shelly. And, you know, part of his thing was to, like, you know, fly me down to where these guys were training. Evander Holyfield, Pernell Whitaker, and I was part of that camp. And as an amateur, I was sparred with a guy named Evander Holyfield. And I don't win 5 national championships without Holyfield continuously kicking my behind. On, like, if we sparred like 10 times, he's eaten me up like 7 times.
7
8 times. Oh, 9 times. You know. but interestingly enough, when I got knocked out in my first pro fight, I was called by the Duvas to be his sparring partner for his first fight or second fight against Larry Holmes. Right? And because I, like, you know, have a similar style to Larry.
Right.
I'm not Larry Holmes, but, like, you know, I have a, like, you know, similar style jab-wise. So they flew me in, And, you know, I had something to prove. So I had, like, you know, a quote-unquote chip on my shoulder, you know. And I did so well against him. One day I walked into the hotel. It was a weekend. And Vander, I can't tell who the champion is. Now, when that guy puts a stamp on you like that,
yeah,
that's putting a stamp on you.
Right.
I'm like, okay. And I believed it. Okay,
yeah.
Because, like, Georgie Benton, like, he doesn't mince words, man. If he doesn't like you, if he doesn't think you're talented, doesn't give you anything. And he gave me that.
That's great.
Dude, that's like an Academy Award. Well, not really, but, like, you know, it's like, it's big, though. It's epic.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's building you up. And even though, as you mentioned, even though, Michael, at the time you knew when you stepped in the ring that Holyfield was... was better than you in those sparring sessions?
Oh no,
no,
no, no, oh, no, 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 no! I never felt that way.
You never felt that way.
No, but well, like, you know, I felt that way after.
After. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha.
It makes sense, right?
That does make sense. Yeah.
So as I'm watching the show, you're talking, going through a very difficult relationship with your dad, mm-hmm. and your difficult relationship with boxing and mm-hmm. fighting amateur and pro. And I'm almost expecting you to be completely done with the sport and move on and not even touch it. But I mean, it's still central in your life.
You know, the sport resonates with me and other people. I mean, it's just, you know, my education, is essentially in boxing.
Mm-hmm.
And I write about it from time to time. I've played boxers. I relate to it.
You were Sonny Liston in Ali?
That's right, in Ali. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, it courses through my veins. I can't help it. You know, I'm okay with being in conflict with it now. You know, I'm okay with the conflict, you know, because now I can use it.
Right.
It's valuable. It mm-hmm. serves me, as opposed to me sort of like it's serving me.
Right.
That makes sense.
That does make sense.
You know?
What about, Andrew hit upon it, what about, you know, your relationship with your father? You guys settled in Queens, right?
Mm-hmm. Cambria Heights.
Right. Your cousin Rudolph was a professional fighter, right?
This guy knows this stuff, man.
He fought against Sugar Ray Robinson, right?
This, Sugar Ray's second to last fight.
Right. So
when did it take place?
I don't remember that.
Uh-huh. See? No, I'm busting it. I don't know why. I have no idea. I don't know.
You got me, Michael. You got me. But tell us a little bit about, you know, Andrew hit upon it. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with your dad, you know, early on, and certainly, you know, your cousin, what he did as a pro fighter, and
yeah.
and the sugar, the boxing gloves with Sugar Ray.
Wow, man, wow. You guys do some fantastic research. I'm impressed. You guys are like CIA cops. the first pair of boxing gloves I ever got was from Rudolph. And apparently, they were the gloves that he fought Ray Robinson with. Apparently. And what did I do with them? I did what every blue-blood Jamaican West Indian American kid would do. I turned the stuffing into like a bed for my G.I. Joe. And my father went ballistic. This man, like, you know, went, I'm like, dude, I'm 10.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not thinking about right. Sugar Ray Robinson could be anyway. You don't have to think about
right.
that.
But right. Like, you know, so, yeah. But the most interesting thing about Rudolph, he passed away, I think, a couple years ago. And, you know, he had damage.
Okay.
Right? And I recognized that when I was younger. Okay. I didn't know what it was, though. I didn't know how to define it, you know. And the interesting thing about my father, you know, my father's an interesting dude, man. He's a gregarious. He's charming. He has, like, you know, like an epic temper, you know, and from time to time, he would always laugh at Rudolph because he was damaged, and he would, like, you know, have this, like he would walk funny, he would talk funny, he would slur his words, and he was hard to understand. My father would, like, laugh at him behind his back.
Really?
Yeah, man, yeah. I'm like, wow.
And how did you take that? Well, how do you take that then? How do you take that now?
Well, it's sad that this guy, like, you know, would bring his cousin over to the house and then, like, you know, ridicule him. You know, then it was confusing.
Right.
Because here's a guy who's older, my father's first cousin, who gave me boxing gloves, who encouraged me to box, you know, said I had some gift or talent, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, you know, well, he's, like, speaking after a couple of drinks. He's slurring his words, and my father's laughing at him. I didn't get it. It was confusing.
Right.
You know, but, like, you know, I also saw a part of human beings, and my father, like, well, like, you know, I mean, human beings can be vicious as hell, man.
They can.
You know, and I saw that very early, you know. Well,
your boxing career ended.
Mm-hmm.
You got knocked out and found out you had this, I don't know what the right word for it was, but you almost died.
Yeah.
Are you okay now, or is this something you still have to worry about? And your
how do
life?
I look, my friend?
You look great.
No.
You look rested off that red eye.
Right, exactly. No, you know what, guys? I'm lucky. You know, I don't know, like, you know, God or whatever. Like, you know, I'm lucky, man. After the Herbie Hyde fight, 96 hours in a coma. You know, I was told, you know what, man, you can't fight again. And, like, I thought that boxing was all I knew, but it wasn't. You know, knock on plasterboard, like, you know. But it was hard for me to find, like, you know, my place post-boxing, because, once again, boxers think that, like, you know, I thought that boxing defined me. That was the end all be all. You know, although, like, you know, I was in conflict with it, you know, I thought it was. And I got lucky. I started writing. I got hired by Burt Sugar. And, you know, so I've been lucky. And I didn't ask you a question, did I?
Well, you did.
You did. You did. But you're fine. Everything's
good. No. You know
what,
man?
You just can't get punched in the forehead.
Oh, no. I don't think anybody should.
Yeah.
I mean, like, look, if you're getting, like, $85 trillion, get punched in the head.
Right.
You'll be all right.
But, yeah, right. You'll be able to do it. But you're still a fan. We were talking about during the course of the break. I mean, I'm a boxing fan, Andrew. I mean, we're boxing fans. Maybe the sport isn't where it was, you know, 15, 20 years ago, Michael. But, you know, you're going to be at the Garden tomorrow night for the championship fight, the pay-per-view event. I mean, and you know, you're still a fan of the sport, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I cannot be. You know, even when, like, I get phone calls from people or, you know, text from people, Mike, watch the fight. I'm like, my man, check us out. I'm watching the fight already.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me to watch the fight. Right, I'm there.
You're locked in, right?
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, you know, some of the guys are like Mark Breland trains Deontay Wilder.
Right.
Mark is a dear friend of mine.
Right.
So, like, I watch it for the interest of what's going to happen and to support Mark. You know, but, I mean, this thing is in my blood, man. Like, you know, it's, although I'm in conflict with it, it's like, you know, I'm in conflict with my ex-wife. But I still, like, you know, having passion for it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, you've worked on a lot of movies. You've been in movies, like you said, but you've coached actors to be in boxing movies. Is there an actually legit boxer among actors that you've worked with, or are they just all actors pretending
trying to get me in trouble? You know? Man. You're trying to get me banned from Hollywood, bro. Come on, bro. I'm not that stupid. Come on, bro. No.
Right. Who's the most non-athletic actor you've ever worked with, Michael?
Oh, dude, really? Wait. Let me process that question. Right. No. Will Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah. He nailed Muhammad.
Yeah.
He nailed it, man. And he legitimately could fight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you enjoy acting?
There is an acting coach in L.A., Milton Katselis, right? And he has this quote, rehearsal with an actor who knows how to act is better than sex. I agree with that. Acting, like on stage and doing, like, you know, rehearsing a scene in a workshop, like nailing a scene, whew, there's nothing like that.
Nothing like
so,
it.
So, yeah, I love it. Outside of my son, there's nothing more I love more than it.
Nothing more.
Nothing more.
You mentioned you know, when, and certainly, you know, you'd had a, you know, a fascinating life for 54 years of age. Certainly, I mean, you've done a lot of different.
Why say 54?
No. But you don't look 54. You look about 40 years old. You look great, Michael.
Thank you.
In terms of what you learned in life, your relationship with your son, you know, the trickle down effect. What's the message? What do you take from your life experiences that you want to pass along to your son?
That's a great question. That's a beautiful question, actually. What I learned from my father, you know, and I empathize with my father because, like, you know, his life wasn't the life of Riley. You know, he had a horrible childhood with his father. I get it. I get it now. You know, and but like, you know, the most valuable lesson that I learned was how not to treat my son. You know, how not to, like, you know, try to dominate him. You know, how not to, like, you know, push him into something that, like, you know, he doesn't want to be. You know, or just, like, you know, how not to even, like, you know, like, force a conversation with him.
Right.
You know, if you don't want to talk to me, go, okay, great, I get it, man. I'm here where you need me.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
We got Michael Benton studio. Can you hang out for another segment?
Of course.
All right,
please.
There we go. New docuseries out. Loser on Netflix. We'll come back. You got Michael Benton studio, Bogus and Malusis on this Friday morning right here, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, CBS Sports Radio is toll-free live, brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes can save 15% or more on car insurance. Bogus and Malusis with you. Our pleasure being joined here by Michael Benton, studio actor, former boxer. New docuseries out on Netflix, Loser. Check it out. And Michael's a part of that. I was asking during the course of the break, Michael, and relay the message to our audience is, you know, Andrew and I watched it, right? Our, you know, guys behind the glass watched it. Did you watch it? What was, you know, your part of this series? What was your take when you watched yourself on film? Because you've seen it before. You're an actor. You know, I mean, so, but I'm talking about this is different. This is talking about your life.
Yeah.
This is real.
Yeah.
You know, you're not playing a role. How difficult was it watching you on film?
My overall feeling was one of satisfaction.
Okay.
That, yeah, okay, great. This is it.
Okay.
Everyone gets it, you know, and the person who I really wanted, you know, to get it was my father.
Right.
But, like, you know, I don't think he's in a place emotionally or even psychologically where, like, you know, he can embrace that. You know, and I get it. You know, it's just, you know, it's just, that's on him.
The way it is.
Yeah,
right.
sure. You know, and I empathize with that still.
Right.
You know? But, I came away thinking, you know what, man, let me tell you a story. Wow. I was in Atlanta. I was invited to the set of Bad Boys 3.
Okay.
With Will Smith.
Yeah, and,
like,
nice.
And Martin Lawrence, man. And I saw Will, right? And he stopped. He stopped shooting. And he came up and hugged me. And he said, Michael, he didn't curse.
Right.
I cursed.
Right.
He said, Michael, I'm paraphrasing. What you said was like Jesus being hung up on the cross and confessing.
Wow.
I mean, I'm like, Will, check it out. I'm not Jesus, dude.
Right.
No. He said, no. I'm not saying that. But, like, you know, like your
impactful
confession. Yeah. I'm like, wow. I started crying, man.
Yeah. I could imagine.
Like, wow, man.
Right. Well, to have that to impact people like that, Michael, with your message and your story,
yeah,
you know, that would bring tears to anybody that's got any kind of an emotional connection in their body. Yeah. That's going to bring tears to their eyes because you're affecting people.
Yeah,
in a positive way.
No, yeah, and you know, I'm aware of that, but, like, you know, there's we've been getting, like, tons of messages from people from all over the world, and, like, you know, there's a responsibility that comes with that. It's responsibility.
Yeah.
And I get it. I'm open for it.
Right.
You know, so it's beautiful.
So all the stuff you're doing now, all this creative stuff, were these things that you always wanted to do and had to kind of keep down inside because your dad was putting you in the ring and you were boxing? Or is this all stuff you discovered post-fighting?
Good question. I think the things that are coming out now were always there. I just didn't have a platform, quote unquote, to exercise it. You know, and I found, you know, writing first. I started writing because you know, I was training this fighter for Stan Hoffman, my last manager, and you know, I wasn't fulfilled. I didn't feel fulfilled. So we're over in Holland, and a British reporter comes to cover me, like one of those, like, you know, what are they doing now stories, right? So I walk into this restaurant, and he says to me, "Mike, you're not happy, are you?" I'm like, "No, I'm not." "So what do you want to do?" "What you do?" "Start writing then." So I called Michael Katz, and I said, "Mike, like, you know, I really want to start writing. You know, assign me something." And he assigned me to go down to, I was living in the Poconos then. And Mark Breland and Emanuel Stewart was training not too far away from my house in the Poconos. I drove down there, interviewed Mark and Emanuel about Mark's comeback fight after he lost to...
I forget.
Look at Marlon
Stalin.
Me.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And interviewed Mark, and like Mark, my cats ran the piece. And yeah, like, nice stuff, you know. And a few weeks later, I ran into Bert Sugar, who read the piece. And Bert Sugar hired me to write in his magazine, Bert Sugar's Fight Game.
That's great.
And the article that I wrote about getting knocked out, Anatomy of a Knockout, that got seen by Ron Shelton, you know, the Hollywood director.
Yeah.
And he called me up and said, "Man, if you look here, if you can, like, you know, act like you write, come out to LA, I'll get you a gig," something like that.
It's amazing, the connection.
And, yeah, and he plugged me in, you know. Well, actually, a producer named Fred Berner plugged me in. I was training Fred's son,
okay,
who was 12 years old at the time. And he knew Ron. Ron and Fred had made the film together. I forget the name of the film. But yeah, and I mean, it's all about allies, man.
Yeah, that's it.
But it also started with you saying, "I want to write,"
yeah,
and doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be at Gleason's Gym in Brooklyn tomorrow morning, correct?
Yes, sir.
7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Absolutely. You can get tickets and more. Hop on Michael's Twitter, at Michael Bent, or I am Michael Bent. Two ways you can go about doing that. Two T's at the end. Tell us a little bit about, Michael, the workout tomorrow morning at Gleason's, a world-famous gym in Brooklyn.
Yes, it is. Bruce Silverglade was nice enough to invite us down to teach cut. You flubbed that line, Michael. Cut. Bruce was kind enough to invite us down to teach some clinics and some seminars, half-hour seminars, hour-and-a-half seminars, boxing, the headspace of a boxer, exercise that boxers do to, like, you know, tone the body and get the body ready to, like, you know, not get hit.
Yeah.
Or get hit.
Right.
Right.
Which is important.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Not get hit and prepare yourself, your body, to get hit.
There,
because at some point in time, you will get hit.
Well, if you're good. Not if you're bad.
That's it. 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, if you're in the tri-state area, Gleason's Gym, world-famous Gleason's Gym, Brooklyn, New York. Tickets. Tickets and more info available. Hop on Michael's Twitter account at Michael Bent, MichaelBent, or I am Michael Bent. Docuseries Loser, fantastic. Michael, we enjoyed it. Thank you so much for the time this morning. Andrew and I, our
Thank
pleasure.
You guys.
All the success moving forward.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks
Appreciate
for coming
that,
in this morning.
Yes, sir.
You got it. That wraps up hour number two. We'll come back hour number three. Tony Dungy will join us. He's got a new book coming out as well. Taz and the Moose, Bogus is in the house, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.